Hi everyone, a warm welcome to this, the June edition of the Angus Talking newspaper. I'm Ian, and your readers this month are Fiona, who reads from the Angus County Press of the 21st of May, followed by Jenny, reading from the edition of the 28th of May, and finally Julie covers the latest edition, which came out on the 4th of June. At the end, we go back in time. You'll find an article read by me from the Brecon Advertiser from a way back in 1986, just after Angus Talking Newspapers was founded. And if you're listening on USB, you'll find an extra article from the Talking News Federation on the woman who founded the Save the Children Fund. But before we get started, I would like to make an important announcement about a get-together we at Talking Newspapers are planning, something we haven't tried before. We would like to invite all our listeners, that's all of you, to meet with us, the volunteers who bring you these recordings every month, to a wee social gathering at Brecon City Football Club on Tuesday the 18th of August at 7pm. This will be very informal, just a cuppa, a biscuit or two, and a chance to meet each other and maybe talk about our service. Next month, on the recording, I will be back and I will give you more details. And we will also include a slip of paper along with the recording so that you can let us know if you will be coming. A partner, friend or other companion will also be very welcome. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. In the meantime, here is Fiona to start this month's readings.
Hello, Fiona here, reading from the 21st of May edition of Angus County Press. 215 miles on one wheel. A North Sea coast-to-coast cycling challenge will take on an extraordinary twist this June, as one fundraiser prepares to ride 215 miles on a unicycle. Fife-based engineer Will Homer is undertaking the event to raise funds for charities, including Arbroath FC Community Trust. No stranger to endurance challenges, Will has previously cycled from Land's End to John O'Groats and skied across Greenland. However, he admits the 2026 BP Coast to Coast cycle on just one wheel may be one of his toughest tests yet. He's going to go crossing Scotland from Ullapool to Aberdeen to raise money for the Archie Foundation, Instant Neighbour, Aberdeen Football Club Community Trust, as well as Arbroath Football Club Community Trust, Will's own chosen charity. The ride has been slightly adapted for him to avoid some of the harshest hills due to the added physical demands of riding a unicycle. He said, "I have done the coast-to-coast ride before, but thought I'd go a step further this year. I used to ride a unicycle when I was about 10, and after 25 years, I dug it out from my parents' garage. I couldn't believe it. I could still ride it." Green light for village houses. A bid for 5 houses to be built on the site of former blacksmith's yard at Wellbank has been given the go-ahead after councillors originally overturned the planning permission. The workshop on Kellis Road was demolished after permission for 3 homes was granted in 2024. Fresh proposals lodged by Susan Burness Architect for 5 houses were submitted to the council last year. However, the application was rejected by council officials acting under delegated powers in February. They said the development was out of keeping with the character of the village. Concerns over possible flooding and possible noise were also raised. A decision had been due last month, but was deferred for a site visit to be undertaken. The application went before councillors for a decision during a development management review committee. The proposals split the chamber, with some councillors raising concerns that the site would become overdeveloped. During the meeting, it was also revealed that a noise nuisance objection by the Environmental Health Department had been dropped. Convener Bill Duff said, "I had a look around the other houses in Wellbank, and there are quite a lot of two-storey houses. The houses are smaller than the village hall, so the argument that they are too big, I don't agree with. I also did not see many houses with large gardens, so I'm not sure the argument it is overdeveloped fits with the rest of Wellbank." The vote tied, with 3 in favour and 3 against, settled by Mr Duff's casting vote. Jack leaves for Livy to go full-time. Jack Wilkie has left Arbroath to join Livingston after training compensation costs were agreed between both clubs. The 22-year-old arrived at Gayfield from Dundee in 2024, helping Arbroath win the League One title in his first season, then reach the playoffs last term. His final game came in the playoff defeat to Dunfermline Athletic, bringing his total to 89 appearances for the club, as he only missed one game across the two seasons. Wilkie's performances at left back saw him named Fans Player of the Year, and he was offered a new deal. However, the promise of full-time football was enough to lure the Dundonian to West Lothian for next term. Wilkie told the club's media team, "My 2 years at Arbroath have been special, from winning League One to achieving third in the first year back in the Championship is something I'm really proud to have been part of. Everybody involved in the club has made me and my family so welcome during my time. I would like to thank my teammates, the staff, and the fans for the support I've been given during my time, and I wish the club all the best for the future." Fan zone for World Cup opener approved. Plans for a ticketed fan zone event at Forfar's Reid Hall for Scotland's World Cup opener have been approved. The event is set to take place on Sunday, June the 14th, for the national team's match against Haiti, their first appearance at the tournament in 28 years. Angus Alive is behind the plan. Last month, Angus Council approved a general 3 a.m. licence extension for the entire tournament, but only for matches being screened live. This will include an extra 30 minutes beyond the final whistle for Scotland games, where applicable, and will apply to the Haiti game, which kicks off at 2 a.m. UK time. Extended hours were approved despite concerns raised by Police Scotland, who had warned that county-wide late opening could lead to extensive resourcing issues. Board members considered 3 options. No general extension with premises to make individual applications for extended hours. General extension for all premises with no time restriction. General 3 a.m. extension for whole tournament with extra 30 minutes beyond final whistle for Scotland matches where applicable. The application for the Reid Hall went before councillors at a recent meeting. Angus Alive revealed that the capacity for the event would be 300. They asked for an occasional licence to run from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m, saying it was a one-off application given the timing of the match. Scott McCroovey from Angus Alive said, "This is not an alcohol-led application, nor an attempt to create a late-night venue outside normal policy hours. It's a carefully planned, fully ticketed, seated, civic event operated by Angus Alive. Orange Walk to go ahead. A bid to stop a planned Orange Order march in Forfar from going ahead has failed. The Wishart Arch Defenders 444 are set to parade through the town on Saturday, June the 27th. The event has been held annually without incident for around 20 years. It takes place around the date of the anniversary of the Battle of the Boyne. The issue was discussed at a recent special meeting of the authority's public processions subcommittee meeting and faced fresh opposition following an objection from Forfar SNP councillor Lynn Devine. In her objection, Councillor Devine raised concerns regarding the size and time of the event, saying she was feeling less happy about a parade of 80 to 90 participants led by a flute band at around 8:15 a.m. She raised further concerns that the proposals were not very sensitive to all the residents along the route. However, Police Scotland said they had no objection to the parade. During the meeting, Angus Council solicitor Stuart McQueen revealed that the organiser had confirmed the town march had taken place along the same route and with a band for 20 years. The parade assembles at Market Muir and marches along North Street and East High Street. A wreath is then laid at the cross. Mr. McQueen added, "The reason it is so early is that they are joining a larger procession in Edinburgh and need to be there by 10:30. It was also revealed that plans for the North Lanarkshire Flute Band to come to Forfar have been dropped. Instead, they will lead a parade in Stonehaven, which will be the first Orange March in the North East for 25 years. New Farm Foods for Arbroath. Farm Foods is proposing to develop a new store in Arbroath and is holding a consultation event in the town tomorrow, Friday. That's Friday past, folks. The new store would be the company's biggest and most modern store in Angus, offering a brighter and more spacious layout, an easily accessible location and free parking at the door. It would offer the full range of branded and farm foods, own label frozen food, general groceries, chilled goods, bread, fresh fruit and vegetables, and household items. The event will take place in the Champions Lounge at Gayfield Park, Dundee Road, between 12:30 and 6:30 p.m. Farm Foods property team will be on hand to introduce and discuss the proposal, answer questions and gather feedback, which will help shape their forthcoming planning application. Youth Theatre's original musical. A group of Forfar young people will premiere their own new and original musical next week. Spotlight's Community Youth Theatre will stage Historic Hysteria, a production created entirely by members aged 11 to 18 at Studio 32 on the town's East High Street. Supported by National Lottery Awards for All Scotland and the Forfar Common Good Fund, the production features an original score written by young songwriter Brandon Marnie and arranged by musical director Colin Grant. The story follows Sophie, a young person swept into a journey through time, taking audiences from the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020 to the age of dinosaurs, the Roman Empire, the Dark Ages, and beyond. A defining feature of Historic Hysteria is its emphasis on youth leadership, from script writing and choreography to props, costume design, lighting and sound. Young people have played a leading role in shaping and delivering the production, supported by experienced volunteers. Well, we've missed out on the performances, folks, because those took place on May the 28th to the 30th. But I thought you'd be interested in hearing all about this project. I'm sure they'll do another project again. Consultation on network changes. A series of consultation events is due to take place in Angus following SSEN Transmission releasing plans to upgrade the electricity transmission network between Southern Aberdeenshire and Angus. The proposals, which are outlined in a booklet now available to the public, include the replacement of two substations and the construction of a new one. The company said the developments will provide a secure supply of electricity for local communities while enabling future clean power connections and a reduction in the cumulative impact of overhead lines across Scotland's east coast. The plans also include the removal of around 82 kilometres of overhead line between Craigiebuckler in Aberdeen and Manichae. The line, which is around 70 years old, is nearing the end of its operational life. SSEN Transmission has said that removing the ageing infrastructure, which consists of more than 550 steel towers and wooden poles, is essential to maintain network reliability. It will also help to reduce the cumulative impact of current and proposed overhead line projects between Aberdeenshire and Angus. Customers thanked for realising 13 million total. Aldi is thanking its shoppers across Scotland for helping the supermarket raise £13 million for Teenage Cancer Trust through their nine-year partnership. Since 2017, Aldi staff in Scotland have organised a range of fundraising activities, from skydives and cake sales to marathon challenges, with generous donations from shoppers in across the country, further boosting the total. In celebration of the milestone, staff in Scotland and across the rest of the UK will take part in the Walk With Us challenge to mark International Nurses Day, walking 13,000 steps a day over 2 weeks, the approximate distance a nurse covers during each shift. The money raised will help Teenage Cancer Trust continue to provide specialised nursing care and expert youth support for young people with cancer across the UK. The charity is the only one in the UK that provides specialised nursing care and expert youth support for young people aged 13 to 24 who have been diagnosed with cancer, and also supporting their families.
This is Jenny reading from Angus County Press, Thursday, May 28th, 2026. The front page has a picture of a lady with a tartan, and the headline is Back Bid for New Tartan. An Angus charity is seeking material support from the public in a bid to help give it a new look and to help raise awareness. Dyslexia Scotland Angus is calling on local people to back its bid for the creation of an official new tartan. The new tartan is part of a campaign by Dyslexia Scotland to promote the rights of people with dyslexia and the efforts of change makers to create a more inclusive society. It is thought that 10% of people in Angus are dyslexic, many of whom face prejudice and stigma around difficulties with memory, learning to read and spell, and processing problems. Although there is greater awareness of the condition than previously, the charity says that there is still a long way to go to make society more inclusive. World-renowned tartan weavers Loch Carron, whose commissions include work for celebrities and fashion houses, including Vivienne Westwood, Sir Sean Connery and Ralph Lauren, have been picked to design the tartan. The six-colour tartan, based on Dyslexia Scotland's brand palette, symbolises children, young people and adults with dyslexia. Woven in with the changemakers, all working in harmony for a dyslexia-friendly society. Dyslexia Scotland is a national charity with local volunteer-led branches throughout Scotland. The charity campaigns for a dyslexia-friendly society, seeking to ensure that people with dyslexia have their rights met and can reach their full potential. Based in the Scottish Borders, Lough Carron has a heritage of manufacturing tartans dating back to 1892 and has more than 500 tartans in its archive. Supporters are now being invited to pledge funds to help Dyslexia Scotland raise £5,000 towards the first official weave of the bespoke tartan. Gas main replacement. An 8-month project to upgrade Brechin's gas network will start in the town on Monday, June the 1st. SGN is to carry out essential works at three locations to ensure local homes and businesses continue to receive a safe and reliable gas supply. It follows damage caused by Storm Babette in 2023 and recent bad weather, which exposed the gas distribution company's pipe, which crosses under the River South Esk. Flooding removed to topsoil, although the pipe itself was undamaged. Work will be carried out in four phases to limit disruption as much as possible across the project's duration. Phase 1. Traffic lights, give take, to allow trail excavations along the whole route, starting on East Mill Road at the junction of River Street to Montrose Street, starting 1st of June for approximately 2 weeks. Phase 2, traffic lights rolling road closure in section Montrose Street between the abattoir and East Mill Road, starting approximately 15th June for approximately 12 weeks. Phase 3, rolling road closure traffic lights in section on East Mill Road between Montrose Street between River Street, starting approximately 17 August for 20 weeks. Phase 4, traffic lights to allow for final isolation, starting approximately 13th of January for 4 weeks. SGN has worked closely with Angus Council and other key local stakeholders to limit disruption. An SGN spokesperson said, "The new plastic pipe we're laying has a lifespan of approximately 80 years and is also being laid away from the River South Esk, which takes away the pipe ever being at risk again in the future from flooding. Once our work is done, Brechin and the surrounding area will enjoy a safe and reliable gas supply for many years to come. We would like to thank everyone affected for your patience and support." Sea change for historic pier. An historic feature of Montrose Port is due to be demolished to make way for a new development as the facility makes plans for its future. The 144-year-old pier on the harbour's West Quay has stood in its current form since 1882. Although port records show that a pier on the site was first recorded in 1493. This was rebuilt in stone in 1631, while the present sea-listed pier was erected more than 200 years later at a cost of £810. It projects almost 30 metres into the River South Estuary, close to Montrose lifeboat station. However, the stone and rubble structure is now deemed to be unsafe and is out of bounds. Montrose Port Authority submitted a listed building consent application with Angus Council to demolish, with a planning statement setting out the reasons for the move. The port said one project in its overall master plan involves the reconstruction of berths 9, 10 and 11 to capitalise on the potential of existing infrastructure. The submission said, "Berths 9, 10 and 11 are currently in a state of disrepair and considered unusable for modern needs due to their depth. The new project will see the straightening of the North Quay and 800 square metres of warehousing and 200 square metres of additional office space being created. But the port said keeping the old pier would compromise the layout and structural integrity of the new docks. Historic Environment Scotland did not object to the application, and council officials approved the listed building consent application under delegated powers. Action plan proposed. Angus Council has booked a seagull action plan amid growing concerns over attacks by the birds. The move came after Councillor Jack Cruickshanks brought forward a motion seeking possible measures to protect local communities from issues caused by the birds. The motion went before the councillors at a recent meeting of the Local Authorities Communities Committee. During the discussions, councillors raised concerns over the issues caused by gulls in Angus. Montrose councillor Bill Duff said, "We used to have a reasonably effective means of managing this, and that was the nest and egg removal, which we did for many years and which the council paid for. We've now got this inequitable situation where you can apply for a licence for your own property, pay for a contractor, and if you've got the money, sort this nuisance." Councillor Mark MacDonald said, "We struggle to police dog fouling or manage the enforcement of other things, so the idea we're going to be able to enforce the chippy bylaw, where you've got people saying, 'You've dropped a chip, there's a seagull, you're in trouble.' I don't think that's the right way to do it." However, during the meeting, Councillor Serena Cowdy also raised concerns over the decreasing seagull population. She said, "I think the elephant in the room is why we are all these gulls coming into urban areas. It's because of the depletion of fish stock. It's the dropping of litter, the use of bins that aren't gull-proof, but also the fact that we have built on and smashed up their natural habitat." Committee members unanimously backed Mr. Cruickshank's amended motion and asked council officials to bring forward a gull management plan for the county, whilst also acknowledging the significant decline in gull populations. The plan will consider different aspects, including potential enforcement options open to the council and associated costs, a public social media campaign and partnership initiatives. Concerns raised over the use of memorial benches. Angus council officers have been asked to consider setting rules to stop memorial benches becoming covered with flower pots and family trinkets. Councillors have rubber-stamped changes to regulations around the management of more than 70 of the county's graveyards. Amendments included new provisions regarding water cremations and the permitted size of gravestones. But one elected member raised the issue of less formal memorials, commemorative benches, and in particular the items with which they are often decked. Many are located in scenic spots in local communities for family members and others to enjoy a moment of reflection. But Carnoustie councillor David Cheap said that some are becoming a challenge to actually sit on. He said, "This paper is very welcome, but it is maybe timely to do something on memorial benches, not necessarily in graveyards, but we have them right along the seafront in each of our boroughs. It is concerning that the amount of stuff that's being ploughed into these things. People are treating them as purely family memorial benches. They're put there in memoriam of a family member for people to sit on, but they can't sit on them because they're covered in pots and all sorts of things. So I think we need to have some sort of clarification, and I think it would be welcomed by all constituents." Kirriemuir councillor Ronnie Proctor noted that the gesture of loved ones becomes the council's responsibility once installed. Officials said they would take up the matter and bring back a report to the committee. The updated rules also bring in changes relating to alkaline hydrolysis or water cremation, which was made legal in Scotland in March. Bodies are wrapped in biodegradable material before being placed in a pressurised chamber with hot water and chemicals to speed up decomposition. The powdered remains are then returned in an urn to the family. Areas are set aside in graveyards for the burial of caskets, and this will also apply to hydrolysis powder. Ashes also cannot be scattered in any cemetery without permission and the payment of a fee, currently £76.45. Over 10,000 objections. More than 10,400 objections have been lodged against a 70-mile pylon scheme ahead of a public local inquiry taking place next month. Details of four community hearing sessions on plans to install two substations and a chain of 350 pylons measuring up to 246 feet from Kintore in Aberdeenshire to Teeling in Angus have now been published. North East MSP Douglas Lumsden has called on communities to pack out the room and make their voices heard at the consultation events, which start on Tuesday, June 16th from 2:30 p.m. at Bankery Town Hall. The day after, residents will be given the chance to raise their concerns to the Scottish Government's Planning and Environmental Appeals Division at Teeling Village Hall between 6 and 8 p.m. The remaining two community hearing sessions will take place at Brechin City Hall from 2:30 p.m. on Thursday, June the 18th, followed by Kintore Public Hall between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. on Friday, June the 19th. Ahead of the events, for the first time, the Scottish Government has announced the exact number of objections it has received, totalling 10,431, in addition to a further 9 from organisations who were statutory consultees. Mr Lumsden, Scottish Conservative Energy spokesman and North East MSP Douglas Lumsden, said these plans are a colossal act of vandalism on an industrial scale. It's no surprise the proposals have attracted some of the highest number of objections ever seen for an overhead power line project in the UK. Our communities deserve an enormous amount of credit for coming together to voice their concerns on this monstrous scheme which is driving people out of their homes. The four community hearing sessions next month will give residents the opportunity to pack out the room and make their voices heard. This desecration of our countryside is impacting people's health, significantly devaluing their properties and harming prime farmland. He added, "That is why I hope these events, along with the enormous number of objections, send a clear message to the Scottish Government that these plans must be stopped as a matter of urgency." 5 to stand for Angus by-election. The candidates for the forthcoming by-election for the Arbroath and Broughty Ferry UK parliamentary constituency have been announced. Angus Council confirmed that by the time nominations closed at 4 p.m. on Friday, 5 candidates had been selected. Polling for the election of one person to serve as a Member of Parliament for the constituency will take place between 7 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Thursday, 18th June 2026. The candidates standing in the by-election are as follows. Tanvir Ahmad, Scottish Liberal Democrats. Lara Bird, Scottish National Party. Jack Cruikshanks, Scottish Conservative and Unionist Party. Heather Doran, Scottish Labour Party. Bill Reid, Reform UK. Further voter details, including the situation of the 85 polling places in Angus and Dundee being used for the by-election, can be found in the public notices section of the Council's dedicated UK parliamentary by-election web pages. There, constituents will also find details about making arrangements for postal and proxy votes and other relevant information. As this is an election to serve as a member of the UK Parliament, voter ID will be required to be eligible to vote in person. The by-election has been triggered by the recent election of former MP Stephen Gethins as member of the Scottish Parliament. Mr Gethins was elected to serve the Dundee City East constituency. make sure voter registration is up to date. Constituents are being reminded to make sure they are registered to vote in the forthcoming UK Parliament by-election on Thursday, June the 18th, for the Arbroath and Broughty Ferry constituency. This is a cross-boundary constituency containing electors living in Arbroath, Carnoustie, Kellas, Lethem, Monifieth and Monique and surrounding areas in Angus, and those living in Broughty Ferry, Douglas, Fintry, Mill of Mains and Whitfield areas of Dundee City Council. Anyone who wants to vote in this by-election must make sure they are registered in time. If you receive a poll card from the returning officer, this confirms that you are registered to vote at your current address. Kerry Group wins £5,000 for fieldwork. Sustainable Kirriemuir is among several community organisations to share more than £339,000 as part of the Healthy Planet, Healthy People project run by the Royal Society of Edinburgh and the Williamson Trust. The group received £5,000 to help with the regeneration of a 17-acre plot at its community farm at Meadowland and explore how regenerative land management can help nature recovery and local food production. As part of the planned 12-month action research project, the volunteer group will sow meadow and wildflower areas to support a rapid transition to regenerative local food growing. Working with native wildflower grower Scotia Seeds, the group will examine different meadow management practices and assess how a mosaic of habitats can improve biodiversity, ecosystem services and resilience. New phase of broadband development for Angus. Some of Angus's rural towns and villages will join others across the North East area in enjoying the same world-class internet connectivity as Scotland's major cities. Independent broadband builder and provider GoFibre has confirmed its first properties are now ready for service as part of its latest UK government-funded build in Angus, Aberdeenshire and Perth and Kinross. Families, farmers and local businesses in Edsel, Inverbervie and Longforgan are among the first to be connected, with additional premises in Auchinblay and Lethem also expected to go live before the end of this month. Alongside improved digital infrastructure, the scheme is delivering wider economic benefit, creating 30 direct construction roles and supporting up to 180 jobs across the lifetime of the rollout, including subcontracted work. Once live, the network will deliver speeds of up to 1 gigabyte, fast enough to stream the World Cup without buffering, keep farms connected during the peak harvest, and help local businesses handle increased summer demand. The build is being delivered as part of a major government contract to improve connectivity in underserved areas. In 2025, GoFibre was chosen as the supplier to deliver full fibre broadband to around 63,000 hard-to-reach premises across northeast Scotland. The project is part of joint efforts by the UK and Scottish Government to supercharge internet access in mainly rural areas. Project Gigabit is a UK government's programme to enable hard-to-reach communities to access lightning-fast gigabit-capable broadband. The Scottish Government is managing delivery of the programme in Scotland. GoFibre will be adding additional premises to the build on a commercial basis with no public subsidy, meaning at least 100,000 across the North East will be added to its network. This milestone builds on GoFibre's strong momentum as Scotland's fastest growing broadband provider, extending its existing footprint of around 15,300 premises in Angus, including Montrose, Forfar and Kirriemuir, and 9,600 premises in Aberdeenshire, including Lawrencekirk, Stonehaven and Newton Hill. Collins' stagecoach journey ends after 38 years. A much-loved bus driver from Arbroath has parked his bus for the final time after an extraordinary 38-year career serving communities across Angus and Dundee. Colin Hood, the longest-serving team member at Stagecoaches Arbroath Depot, has retired after joining the company in March 1988. Over nearly four decades, Colin has become a familiar and trusted face to generations of customers, building strong relationships across the region. Colin began his career in Dundee as a conductor before qualifying as a driver in 1992. He went on to spend 19 years based at the Forfar Depot before transferring to Arbroath, where he has remained ever since. Colin said, "I've had a great time at Stagecoach. What started as a job I thought I'd do for 6 months turned into a lifelong career. Every day was different, even when it was the same duty. I'll really miss the people, both the customers and the drivers, but I'm looking forward to enjoying my retirement." One of Colin's proudest moments came in 2012 when he was selected to work as a driver at the London Olympics, supporting one of the biggest global sporting events. His time with the company has also shaped his personal life. Colin met his wife while she was working on the buses at Dundee. The couple have now been married for 35 years and buses have remained a central part of their lives, with Colin also helping his son work as a conductor. Dean Smith, operations manager at Stagecoach South Scotland, said, "Colin's contribution over the past 38 years has been nothing short of exceptional. He represents the very best of Stagecoach, professionalism, reliability, and a genuine connection with the communities we serve. He has been a hugely respected and popular member of the team, and his knowledge, experience, and sense of humour will be greatly missed by colleagues and customers alike. On behalf of everyone at Stagecoach, we thank Colin for his outstanding success and wish him a long, happy and well-deserved retirement. Colin retires aged 60 and is looking forward to spending more time with his family and enjoying a well-earned rest after a remarkable career on the road."
Hello, this is Julie reading from the Angus County Press from Thursday, June 4th. No to Road Realignment by Mark Dowie. A proposal to take measures to tackle an Angus accident black spot have been ruled out due to lack of money. Angus roads chiefs say they have done the best they can with available funds to lower the accident rate at Inverkeeler Bridge between Arbroath and Montrose. Over the years, it has been the scene of fatal and serious accidents. The bridge carries the East Coast rail line over the A92 just south of the village, and the stretch of road was the scene of a fatal accident last November. But the bend has also witnessed many HGVs hitting the bridge, which has a clearance height of 13 feet and 9 inches, despite a series of warning signs. Many incidents led to the road being closed and rail services affected, as engineers have to check for structural damage. The bridge was specifically highlighted as Angus councillors discussed plans to invest £365,000 worth of Transport Scotland funding in 2026-27. The money is the latest road safety improvement fund allocation for the county. Since 2023, it has delivered more than £800,000 for local schemes, mainly skid-resistant surfacing. Montrose councillor Bill Duff queried what the proposals for the site are. He said most of the work is improvements to road surfaces, so it's within the budget we've got. Mr Duff asked officials present at the meeting whether there are bigger plans for the bridge black spot. "We had a process quite a long time ago of taking out bad bends, etc. We stopped that about 10 years ago because we couldn't afford to do any more. This is tackling one of those leading causes within the constraints of the relatively small amount of funding available." Chosen to Perform by Mark Dowie. A young singer-songwriter from Arbroath has been chosen to perform at an award-winning traditional music festival later this summer. Pippa Wallace is one of two artists chosen by the Screeve Project to create their own songs in Scots and Gaelic. They will then perform their new work at Edencourt Summer Music Festival under Canvas in August. Established in 2024 in partnership with Edencourt and Tober and Dulcis, the project provides dedicated time for the artist to explore the TADCOR website in depth, using the archives as inspiration for creating and performing new material. A new development this year is the opportunity for participating artists to be mentored by a well-established singer who performs in both Scots and Gaelic. Ainsley Hamill, one of the UK's most distinctive and versatile vocalists, celebrated for a remarkable voice, rich storytelling and deeply emotive style. A folk singer who's now based in the Highlands, Pippa specialises in Scots song, and after spending several years living in Azerbaijan, a growing sense of homesickness sparked a deep connection with Scots song, strengthened her ties to Scotland's musical heritage. Pippa said, "I'm absolutely delighted to have been offered a place on this project. It's an incredibly exciting opportunity and that one that has left me feeling both inspired and deeply motivated." There will be two performances by Ainsley and Pippa at Under Canvas on Wednesday, August 19th at 4:15pm and 7:15pm. Tickets are available at www.edencourt.co.uk/undercanvas. Witness appeal. Police are appealing for more information after a motorcyclist was left in critical condition following a serious crash on the A92. Around 9pm on Friday, May 29th, a crash involving a double-decker bus and a blue Yamaha motorcycle was reported on the route between Arbroath and Inverkeeler at the junction for Caldcotts. Emergency services attended and the 37-year-old male rider was taken to Ninewells Hospital. The road was closed to allow for inquiries to be carried out and reopened around 5am on Saturday. Sergeant Brian McEwen said, "Our inquiries are ongoing to establish the full circumstances and I'm appealing for anyone who witnessed the crash and who hasn't already spoken to officers to get in touch. Anyone with any information is asked to contact 101, quoting reference 3726 of May 29th. Brechin Estate Walkabout. Angus Council Housing Service is holding an estate walkabout in the South East Terrace area of Brechin next week. As well as representatives from the Housing Department, others attended will include the Community Housing Team, Tenant Participation Officer, Housing Technical Team, Police Scotland, Electric Members and Environmental Health. This will be held on Tuesday, June 9th at 4pm and offers an opportunity to discuss problems in the area with the appropriate authority. Opening ceremony by Mark Dowie. The completion and opening of a major multi-million pound regenerative project in Arbroath has been officially marked by Angus Council. The Arbroath A Place for Everyone initiative, designed to reconnect the town centre, transport links, tourism destinations and coastline through improved walking, wheeling and cycling infrastructure. Years in the making, the project was shaped by extensive public consultation beginning in 2015. Feedback from the community identified the former dual carriageway as a significant physical barrier between the high street, public transport hubs and the seafront, negatively impacting accessibility, footfall and civic pride. In July 2019, the Scottish Government confirmed funding support for the project through Walk Wheel Cycle Trust, formerly Sustrans, Places for Everyone programme. Stephen Flynn, Cabinet Secretary for the Economy, for Tourism and Transport, said, "These improvements are already making a real difference to how people move around the town, while also supporting a more attractive and accessible town centre that benefits local businesses and communities. With over £10 million of Scottish Government funding as part of a wider £15 million investment, this work demonstrates how sustained investment can transform places and improve everyday journeys for people across Scotland. Trio of gardens open for charity this weekend. The first weekend of June bring a horticultural delight to the Laurenskirk and Brechin area with three stunning gardens to visit opening with Scotland's Garden Scheme. On Saturday is the stunning Arbuthnot House near Laurenskirk, followed on Sunday by the jewel-like Kirkside of Lochdy at Memuir near Brechin, and for the first time of opening Marcus Wall Garden by Finavon. Healthy donation for school. An Arbroath primary school has become the latest to benefit from a healthy eating initiative being run by Tesco. Nationwide, the company believes that school children should have a varied and balanced diet every day. To that end, branches across the country have been providing grants to qualifying schools four times a year. The grants are in the form of cash cards, which can be redeemed at the school's local branches of Tesco. Wardyke's primary school recently took delivery of a consignment of fruit and veg. Schools, charities and not-for-profit organisations can apply for grants up to £1,500 to help children access healthy, nutritious food. Bakers Rise to the Top by Mark Dowie. Four bakeries from the Angus area have been celebrating success after being recognised in this year's Scottish Baker of the Year Awards. JM Bakery, which has shops in Monifieth, Carnoustie and Arbroath, the Kepti Bakery and Goodfellow and Stephen all won awards. Arbroath-based Wee Cook also managed to pick up a Local Hero Award through the Baker's Den Business Awards, following its success at last year's World Championship Scotch Pie Awards. The awards brought together bakers from across Scotland with businesses recognised across a wide range of categories, celebrating the creativity, skill and passion that underpin the country's bakery sector. The success of the Angus bakeries highlight the strength of local baking talent and the important role these businesses play within their communities. With more than 500 products entered by over 60 bakeries, this year's competition showcased an exceptional standard of talent and craftsmanship. Entries were carefully judged on appearance, baking quality and taste across 11 categories, including biscuits, bread, sweet treats, scone, morning roll, morning goods, donuts, celebration cakes, better for you, free from and innovation. Proposals for 300 House Development on Display by Mark Dowie. Proposals for a major new 300 house development on the edge of Forfar went before the public recently for the first time. The scheme at Westfield is a joint initiative by developers Muir Homes and Scotia Homes. Plans had been put forward previously by both companies for the area of farmland between Glams Road and Dundee Road. A scheme put forward by Muir Homes for the north part of the site was rejected by Angus Council, followed by an unsuccessful appeal to the Scottish Government. The current joint project was announced in 2024, aiming to develop what is the largest area zoned for housing under Angus Council's current local plan. James Reid of Scotia Homes said the partners were pleased to put forward the proposals. He said this is for planning in principle, so we're at the concept stage, but a lot of people have come to see the drawing and ask questions. We would encourage anyone who missed this week's consultation to come along to the second one, which is planned. The northern area of the site, next to Glams Road, would feature around 175 homes. The remainder would accommodate around 125. A key feature is a spine road through the development, taking access from Dundee Road opposite Slatefield, running to Glams Road opposite Don and Lowe's factory. A landscape buffer would be created near the A94 to the north, which has been developed in answer to noise concerns which were raised during a previous Muir Homes application. The area would include room for green space or a sports field at the corner of Westfield Lane and Glams Road. The developers hope to submit a detailed planning application to Angus Council later this year. Angus Beaches among this year's awards by Mark Dowie. All bathing waters in the Angus area have achieved an excellent classification from the Scottish Environment Protection Agency, SEPA, with 7 scooping a Scotland's Beach Award. Environmental charity Keep Scotland Beautiful has announced more than 50 beaches which have won awards and will be flying the prestigious flag this summer. Montrose Seafront, Carnoustie, Arbroath, Monifieth, East Haven and Broughty Ferry have all been named this year, with Lunan Bay reaching its 10th year as an award-winning beach. Barry Fisher, CEO at Keep Scotland Beautiful, said, "Scotland's Beach Awards are the benchmark for quality, celebrating clean, well-managed and sustainable beaches. Our award-winning beaches are all beautiful, but seeing that flag flying means visitors can be assured they are being looked after for people and nature. In order to achieve an award, a range of criteria must be met, including beach safety, access and facilities, and cleanliness. Focusing on local environment quality, the award is designed to complement the work undertaken by SEPA on bathing water quality. Throughout the season, which runs until September 15th, the agency will take regular water samples and provide information, including water quality classifications, monitoring results and pollution risk forecasts to help people make informed choices about where and when to bathe. SEPA issues daily pollution risk forecasts at some bathing waters where water quality has previously been shown to be more vulnerable to short-term pollution following wet weather. Details can be found on the agency's website. MoFest records another smash hit with fans by Mark Dowie. Montrose Music Festival's return to the town's high street attracted a huge crowd as the event got underway on Saturday. The day's packed programme was opened by the Lothallan School Pipe Band and included the Gordon School of Dancing, as well as Rock Choir of Aberdeenshire and Edinburgh, festival stalwarts Emerald Sunday and Florence Jack. And with more than 100 acts playing venues across the town, the weekend-long event offered something for everyone. A spokesman for the organising committee said that there is a collective sense of pride at how the revamped festival was received. They said the festival was a resounding success. From Friday afternoon straight through to Sunday evening, the streets of Montrose were filled with an incredible turnout of residents and visitors alike, all coming together to celebrate live music and community spirit. An event of this scale brings a significant boost to our area, and it was wonderful to see our local shops, cafes and hospitality businesses so well supported over the 3 days. And there's a lot of lovely pictures of the pipe band, dancers, singers and musicians. Retiral after 27 years RNLI Service by Mark Dowie. One of Montrose RNLI's staunchest volunteers has retired after an incredible 27 years with the charity. During his time at the station, Derek Smart has served as lifeboat crew, launch authority and latterly as lifeboat operations manager. Derek joined Montrose Lifeboat Station in 1993, the same year he began work as a harbour pilot with Montrose Port Authority, a role he held until his retirement in 2023. During his years as operational crew, Derek served as third mechanic, second coxswain and helm aboard the station's inshore lifeboat. The lifeboats on station when Derek first joined were the Tyne Class All-Weather Lifeboat, RNLB Moonbeam, and the station's first D-Class Shore Inshore Lifeboat, Home Team 3. One of Derek's standout memories was his first shout as coxswain in 1997. The crew launched to assist the tugboat Shelda 12, which had run aground at Annett Bank off Montrose during heavy seas and a strong easterly gale. With darkness adding to the challenging conditions, a search and rescue helicopter was on scene, preparing to airlift the crew to safety when the vessel managed to free itself from the sandbank. Once in deeper waters, Montrose lifeboat escorted the tug safely into Montrose Harbour. He said it was a very challenging shout with severe weather conditions and difficult seas. What also stands out to me is that it was the same night as the MV Green Lily rescue operation off Bressay in Shetland. 15 lives were saved that night, but tragically an HM Coast Guard winchman lost his life during the rescue. Derek stepped down from operational crew duties in 2013. However, his time away from the station was short-lived, and 6 years later he returned to the station as Deputy Launch Authority and Lifeboat Operations Manager, succeeding Tom Hutchison in the role. Another rescue which remains firmly in Derek's memory was during Storm Arwen in 2021, when Montrose RNLI launched to assist a vessel which had almost run aground at Lunan Bay. As LOM and Launch Authority, making the decision to launch the lifeboat into those conditions was incredibly difficult. It was a very anxious wait for the crew to return safely. I was immensely proud of the crew that night, and rightly so, as they later received a commendation from the RNLI. Derek's wife, Aileen, is also a dedicated volunteer as part of the fundraising team and as fundraising treasurer. She said, "The RNLI has been a huge part of our lives for many years, and I'm incredibly proud of everything Derek has achieved at the station. While I'm looking forward to spending more time together and enjoying retirement, I know he won't be a stranger to the station." Henry Weaver, RNLI Area Operations Manager, said, "Derek has given outstanding service to the RNLI and the people of Montrose over many years." Demand for Centre's 7-day opening by Mark Dowie. A Brecon Distillery's new visitor centre is extending its opening hours in response to its popularity entering its first summer season. Glencadam Distillery opened the centre in November and has seen a rising visitor demand since then. The distillery and visitor centre will now operate full tour, tasting, cafe and retail services 7 days a week. The multi-million pound visitor experience has quickly established itself as a key destination on Scotland's whisky tourism map, offering immersive distillery tours, tutored tastings, exclusive bottlings and hospitality experiences. The move to 7-day operations reflects increased demand and follows a successful recruitment drive that has strengthened the team ahead of the busy summer season, enabling the distillery to welcome increasing numbers of domestic and international visitors. It also underscores the continued investment by owners Angus Dundee Distillers in both the distillery and the county, reinforcing Glencadam's growing role in tourism, employment and local economic activity. Ian Lockhead, Angus Dundee Distillers Director, said, "Opening our doors 7 days a week is another proud milestone for everyone at Glencadam and for the wider Brecon community." Founded in 1825, Glencadam is one of Scotland's oldest working distilleries, known for its traditional production methods that have remained largely unchanged. To find out more, visit www.glencadamwhisky.com or follow at Glencadam Whisky. 20,000 New Trees for Angus Glens by Mark Dowie. Watercourses in the Angus Glens are to benefit from a new scheme bringing 20,000 new trees to the area. The project by Forestry Land Scotland is planting 20,000 native species along rivers and streams in Glendall and Glenprozen. Species include downy birch, aspen, rowan, willows, hazel, bird cherry and common alder. When mature, the trees will help to shade the river and fallen leaves will provide nutrients to support freshwater species such as salmon and brown trout. Tree roots should also stabilise riverbanks when flow rates are high. The project has been funded with a grant from Nature Scots Nature Restoration Fund and is part of the River South Esk Catchment Partnerships, a nature-rich and climate-resilient catchment, involving other local landowners in a joint effort to support restoration across the catchment. Mitchell bags a podium place at a race in Detroit, from Jim McGill. Forfar driver Sandy Mitchell and teammate Andrea Caldarelli clinched their first podium finish in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. In a dramatic final 6 minutes in downtown Detroit, the duo, who started 10th on the grid, took the checkered flag in second position. The result also marked the first Pro Class top three for the new Lamborghini Temerario GT3 on only its third competitive race. Mitchell, in his first full season racing the number 9 Lithia and Driveway Temerario GT3, prepared by Pfaff Motorsports, said that was simply unbelievable. What a brilliant race. We never quite hit the sweet spot with the car through the free practice sessions and qualifying, and we were disappointed to only qualify 10th for the race. We all persevered right through the weekend and ultimately bagged our first podium. I'm so happy. Mitchell returns to IMSA action in the last weekend in June when the championship heads to Watkins Glen International in New York State. Regional Super Series gets underway. Cricket Scotland has announced the squads for the 2026 Men's Regional Super Series, which gets underway this weekend. Forfarshire are well represented in Caledonian Highlanders, with Callum Garden, Jack Hogarth, Michael Leask and Manu Saraswat, while Cameron Brown of Arbroath United has also been selected. The series, which also features Eastern Knights and Western Warriors, consists of three T20 triple headers in June, followed by three 50-over match days in July. A cumulative points tally across both formats and all six match days will contribute to the final standings. Cup groups handed out to the Derbies by Brian Newell. There will be two Angus Derbies in the group stages on next season's Premier Sports Cup. Brechin City are one of three guest sides invited to participate in the competition along with Highland League champions Brora Rangers and Lowland League champions Linlithgow. The draw took place last week at Hampden Park as 40 teams were divided into eight groups of five. City were placed in Group E, where they will meet Forfar Athletic, with the other sides being Stenhouse Muir, Partick Thistle and Livingston. Arbroath and Montrose would also find themselves drawn together, this time in Group B, along with Dundee United, Spartans and Stirling Albion. The eight group winners and three best runners-up progress to the second round, where they will be joined by the sides in Europe, Celtic, Hearts, Rangers, Motherwell and Hibs. The competition will kick off over the weekend of July 11th-12th, with the group stages concluding over the weekend of July 25th-26th. Arbroath get underway with a trip to Spartans on July 11th, while Montrose will need to wait until July 14th to host Dundee United. The Derby will be taking place on July 21st at Gayfield. City and Athletic both start away from home as they head to Thistle and Stenhouse Muir respectively on July the 11th. The Derby being on July 25th at Station Park. Ladies extend unbeaten run with convincing win by Chad Neighbour. Montrose Tennis Club ladies first team extended their unbeaten streak into the second half of the season. A 9-3 win against Broughty Ferry 1 last week sees them remain at the top of Tennis Tayside's Division 2. Orla McLeod and Jenna Henderson won their four sets, and at 14-1, their record is the best in the division. Ali Henderson and Amy Toussaint won three sets, while Wendy Sanger and June Buchan won two. Rachel Sheehan and Angela Smith won two sets for Broughty Ferry, as Alison Thompson and Judith Lynch won one. And lastly, with the Football World Cup about to descend upon us, Scott is keen to reward the fans by Brian Yule. Scott McKenna won his 50th cap for Scotland on Saturday and promises to give it a right go at the World Cup. The 29-year-old from Kirriemuir started for Steve Clark's side in a 4-1 win as Curaco were the visitors to Hampden. The team from the Caribbean took leads through Tahith Chong before having Jurgen Lucadia sent off in the first half. Scotland equalised through Finlay Curtis before the break, before adding a Lawrence Shankland brace and a Ryan Christie penalty. The squad have now flown out to America for their final warm-up game against Bolivia on Saturday before the World Cup gets underway next week. And we now know, of course, that they won that on Saturday. McKenna is delighted to have hit the 50-cap milestone, and the Dinamo Zagreb defender is also pleased it is Scotland who are warming up for the big event this time. I can't believe the amount of people that are heading to America with the cost of everything, the travel, tickets, everything. We're going to go over there and give it a right go because they deserve that for everything they put into it and supporting us as well. Scotland kick off the World Cup against Haiti on Sunday, June 14th, and also face Morocco on June 19th and Brazil on June 24th.
Hi, this is Ian. The article I'm about to read comes from the Brecon Advertiser of Thursday, April the 17th, 1986. That is 30 years ago, just in fact after Angus Talking Newspapers was started. In terms of social attitudes, 30 years is a long time, and so there is some outdated language in this article. The article is entitled, Caroline James Tells Her Story. And under that, there's a subtitle, Memorable Evening in St Andrew's Church in Aid of Talking Newspaper Association. And then the article reads, For April, the evening was cold and blustery with sleety showers. But in St Andrew's Church last Sunday, the picture was one of warmth and colour. The scene was dominated by Caroline James, standing tall and slim above the chancel steps, and against a background created to look like her own sitting room, with bowls of flowers and her own pictures on the walls. Caroline could not see the setting devised for her musical evening, but she had sensed it, and expressed warmly her appreciation of all the work which had gone to make the evening a success. Despite the great handicap of blindness, Caroline has become widely known as a painter and lyricist. The big audience in the church sat entranced, as clearly, fluently, without a break, and with frequent flashes of humour, she told her remarkable story. The musical evening was in aid of the funds of the Angus Talking Newspaper Association, which, as the chairman, ex-Provost Buchanan, pointed out, went to 150 listeners in the area, and 70 workers were involved in its production and distribution. It was a brainchild of Stan Letton. In the beginning, they'd been able to raise some £7,000. They were still living on this, but they had to keep in mind the need to continue raising funds. Caroline James was both a subscriber and a contributor to the Talking Newspaper, and one of their most helpful and encouraging supporters. The story Caroline had to tell was both a moving and an inspiring one. From childhood, it seemed, she had had problems. Always she found it difficult to communicate with other people, even with her parents and family. She had a vivid imagination, but no way of expressing herself. Her father was an officer in the Royal Navy, and when she was 9 or 10, they went to Malta. First she went to the Navy school there and loathed it, then to the Convent of the Sacred Heart and loved it. She used to kneel before the statue of Our Lady, beseeching her to pray for, quote, your very troubled child, and she would always be, quote, filled with love. School, however, was full of problems. Her eyesight was already a problem. She could not read fast enough to keep up with the other children, and glasses did not help. An eye specialist told her she could go blind in later life. But, Carolyn added, when you're in your early teens, your mid-60s seem very far away. Nevertheless, you could not be happy at school. Children can be so cruel to those who cannot do what they can do, Caroline added feelingly. A specialist she saw when she was 17 diagnosed what was wrong with her eyes and warned her that she would be blind by the time she was 35. She tried to prepare for blindness but could get no help nor guidance. The eye trouble worsened more quickly than had been expected, and when she was 21, she was registered blind. Her marriage, understandably, she said, against the wishes of her in-laws, brought her a time of happiness, and she described going with her husband to Lebanon. How glad she was to have known it in its picturesque and peaceful days before the terrible damage and destruction of recent years. The shame and guilt of two broken marriages had to be faced, with pills and tranquilizers of no avail, before Caroline came to know true happiness. Coming to Forfar was a turning point in her life. People were friendly and treated her as a real person. She got a guide dog. At first, she'd been horrified at the idea that she, a human being, could put her faith in a four-legged animal. But she found she could, and what a difference it made to her. When she started to paint, she found that she could not only express herself, but communicate to other people. Since then, she has exhibited widely in Edinburgh, London, New York, and her pictures are hanging in private houses in this country and abroad. She was also invited to appear in a film. Again, the prospect terrified her. 8 or 9 men in and out of her house. But they were kind and helpful. One day, she made a false step, and they exclaimed, "Careful now, you'd think you were..." They were going to add blind, and had quite forgotten she was blind. "That was the greatest compliment I was ever paid," Caroline added. One thing led to another. She was invited to appear on Highway and met Sir Harry Secombe. Rather diffidently, she sent him some of the lyrics she had been writing. She asked her daughter to post them in case her nerve failed when she got to the pillar box. She was delighted at the encouragement Harry Secombe gave her. Some of the lyrics have been sung by Sir Harry himself, Moira Anderson and Ian Wallace. For Ian, she wrote her first Scots lyric. Caroline then sang a number of the lyrics in which she had found a new form of self-expression. Among them, "How Can You Catch Rain?", "Drifting Along on a Rainy Moon?", "Butterflies in the Bow", "Romantic, Whimsical, Out of This World". The audience applauded them warmly. The lyrics had been set to music by Ronnie Cass, and so that she could sing them in the show, he had provided tape music. In the arrangements for the evening and the staging, Mr. Stan Letton, Secretary of the Newspaper for the Blind Association, had the help and experience of Mr. J.L. Thompson. David and Kate accompanied their mother, David operating the tape recorder.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello again, it's Liz from East Kilbride here. Now, if you're listening to this chat, this is perhaps a name that you haven't come across. Eglantine Jebb. And you know, as I go through my life, I know people will say to me, that name just suits that person. Maybe a Max, who is a large man. Well, Eglantine is a name that so much suits the temperament of our woman today. Eglantine's name actually means a prickly plant, a sweet briar of a wild rose with lots and lots of needles. So there we have the image of a prickly person, but a beauty of a rose. And I think it suits our Eglantine very, very well. So how to begin? How does the name suit Eglantine? She was born in Shropshire in 1876. A member of a wealthy, comfortably off family, but also a family with a strong social conscience. Now, we're looking at late Victorian times, where although women could not vote and even fully participate in public life, many of them at a local level had found ways of doing their bit, let's put it that way. And Eglantine was surrounded by strong women who had these ideas about the world. Her mother had founded an arts and craft association to give employment in the area. Her sister went on later to help begin the Women's Land Army in World War I. Another sister married a radical Labour MP and was very involved in education for the working classes. She even had a spinster aunt. Spinster, there's another word from an earlier era, who had never married but had money and determination to learn skills and teach them to Eglantine, who became very proficient in carpentry and in fishing and in all kinds of gardening and, of course, in any kind of financial issues. So this was setting up Eglantine for an active life and a life of, we could call it, service. Her first idea was to go to university. So she did, one of the very first, and read history at Oxford University. But 1 year teaching decided her teaching was not for her. Good for her, making that decision early was probably very wise. And she put her mind to finding out about the society, doing statistics, gathering information, seeing what the reality was in poor areas of survival and more often low survival rates of children, for example. And she wanted to apply these analytical, modern scientific approaches to her charity work. She did lots of background work on education committees, and then, as she was a young, fit and active adult, did what she could in her local area, even leading up to World War I, setting up a boys' employment registry, trying to see what could be done. As the war was approaching, she travelled to the Eastern Front, already a very turbulent area, to try and see what could best support the people of Macedonia who were facing very, very grim times. So she was seeing the reality of conflict, and she was seeing the reality, especially the impact on children. What she did thereafter was to focus her enormous talents on how children were suffering. And at the end of the war wasn't just one day in November 1918. The war, especially for the former German countries and the country which therefore was badly, badly defeated, faced extreme poverty, extreme famine. And it was clear to Eglantine that the Allied blockade following the war was having an appalling impact, especially on the children of the defeated countries. She set up a pressure group called Fight the Famine Council, saying children should not be victims of what adults decided to do. We must protect the children. Now, this was an interesting and even very, very surprising attitude just after the end of the First World War. She was so determined, she had leaflets printed, and she stood in Trafalgar Square and gave out the leaflets saying, "Fight the famine, save the children." She was arrested, and the Crown Prosecutor must have agreed with her decency, and he paid her fine even after he had fined her. This showed her that ordinary people were more understanding and supportive of the ordinary civilians in Germany and Austria than perhaps the official government line was. and this gave her an inspiration and an idea. In 1919, she set up the embryonic group that became Save the Children Fund. She was immediately surprised and delighted that the British public donated a large sum of money. They knew the children were not to blame. They wanted to support these children in these dire situations. And working with her sister Dorothy, by 1920, the very basics of the Save the Children Union had been established in Geneva. It was always Eglantine's wish to run this as more than a do-good charity. It had to be positive, it had to be scientific, had to make the way the organisation worked most efficiently so that any money gathered could go directly to the children who needed it. And that's when you see Eglantine, perhaps in an echo, sadly, of her present world, she faced one humanitarian crisis after the other. Because after the situation in Austria and Hungary began to ease, there was a huge crisis around 1921 in Greece, and that was followed by an even greater emergency, the Russian famine of 1921, which actually affected the old Russian Empire, including the present-day country of Ukraine. Eglantine's organisation shipped hundreds of tons of food and medical supplies during this crisis. And you know, it was clear to her that one crisis after the other needed an organisation that would support children. And also, she wanted to put it very closely and clearly into the world view that children need to have rights. Now, we may think, of course children have rights, but in fact, that was a very new idea, that children should not be victims of adult conflict. And she crafted the Declaration of the Rights of the Child, and it was adopted in 1924 by the organisation, the League of Nations. An organisation which saw the need for this, but sadly, of course, the League of Nations was not able to stop the next great crisis of the World War. Eglantine did not live to see these greater tragedies of the 30s and into World War II. She died really very young, and she died in 1924. And you know, she had struggled against very, very great thyroid illness. One might almost say that she could easily have taken to her bed and just read magazines and not bothered about the world. But that wasn't the making of this woman, and that wasn't the work that she did. And you know, it's amazing how little she is known. Perhaps it's because she died relatively young, or perhaps it's because the organisation was the focus of the world attention and not the person. So that's why she's very much overlooked by history. Because when you look at the work of the Save the Children today, in these days we're living through of extreme trauma and extreme challenge for children, the work is amazing how much she has managed. The Save the Children Fund currently work in over 100 countries, and it's reckoned that their charity, as professional and as dedicated as was always the dream of Eglantine, has saved the lives and enhanced the lives of over 100 million children in 115 countries. Now, if that's not a legacy, I don't know what is. The most vivid, perhaps, legacy of Eglantine Jebb is that we do have a Universal Children's Day. Now, you might not know the day, but you might be aware of their logo. It's a globe of the world and children holding hands around the world. This was the logo adopted by the United Nations, and the 20th of November is Universal Children's Day. It's come a long way in its development from the first dreams and beliefs in social justice for children as dreamed of by Eglantine Jebb, a woman in the shadows, a woman who created and contributed so much, a prickly woman who wanted things done properly. Quite usually that was her way, but anyone who worked with her recognised her devotion and her utter dream of bringing better lives to the children of the world. Eglantine Jebb, the founder of the Save the Children Fund. Take care of yourselves, folks. Bye-bye.
TNF Soundings.